across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone. I'm the officer of the deck today. We've got some great programs for you. I think you'll find very interesting. We always want to remind you, you can find more about Veterans Radio at its Facebook site or at the web. VeteransRadio.org is our new URL, VeteransRadio.org, where we're on the web 24/7. You can find a lot of our podcasts there as well. We post new ones every Tuesday, so you can get a new story, a new interview, something you didn't know before by going to VeteransRadio.org. And before we get started, we want to thank our sponsors. First up, we want to thank National Veteran Business Development Council, NVBDC.org. It was established to certify both service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses. You'll find out how they can help your business by going to NVBDC.org. We want to thank Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans fights for veterans' disability rights all across the nation. You can reach them at 800-693-4800 or on the web at legalhelpforveterans.com. We'd like to welcome to Veterans Radio today Jim Lindsay out in beautiful Oregon, and he's going to talk to us about a book he wrote, The Sniper, The Untold Story of the Marine Corps' Greatest Marksman of All Time. Jim, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Yeah, well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, you know, it's an interesting story. When it caught my attention and I got the book and read through it, I was really excited because I learned something that changed my perspective, because I didn't know about Chuck Mawhinney, another good Oregon guy, and served in Vietnam. Actually, he was in your neck of the woods, but for the longest time, you didn't know who this guy was or what he had done. Tell us how you came about writing the book.
Yeah. In 1979, my brother and I bought a ranch in eastern Oregon. We're farmers. So I moved over to Baker City near the farm and we'd bought, and I met Chuck Mawhinney. We were pretty young fellows then, and we both liked drinking beer, and there was a tavern called the Idlehour. It was kind of a mill tavern, and he worked for the Forest Service, and if I was in town about quitting time, maybe getting parts from somewhere, I'd stop there and have beers with him, and he's just a great guy to socialize with. Interesting fella, and we talked about everything. In fact, he came out to our ranch and hunted ducks and geese a couple of times, but we never talked about the military.
And this is a time when a lot of guys, Vietnam's going back in the late 60s, and Chuck kind of got swallowed up in all of that. Actually, I thought the story that he had to have his juvenile record kind of disappear in order to get enlisted into the Marines was just a classic situation. But he had grown up in rural Oregon, always was outside kind of guy. Had, you know, all his buddies in the neighborhood had BB guns and were shooters, if you will. So when he got into the Marine Corps, he kind of was looking at Camp Pendleton to move his way over to Scout Sniper School, and he was able to do that, wasn't he?
Yeah, it was kind of like things happen to people's lives. It was accidental. He joined the Marines right out of high school, 1967, and they sent him to Camp Pendleton for his basic training. And he wanted to be an aviator. He wanted to be to fly for the Marines. And so they the night before the test he was to take for aviation training, him and another two guys went out and did the town up, and he woke up in a movie theater at 5 o'clock in the morning. And he, I mean, they really did a good job. So he didn't do very well in the test. So he was going to have to wait around for another month, and they had him washing dishes. And in the meantime, the Scout Sniper School opened, and that caught his eye because he'd loved shooting, liked to hunt and that sort of thing. So he signed up for that, and so that changed his life right there. And he, no one knew, including him, that he would be the best of the best before it was over.
Well, and you talk about how, you know, life doesn't always go as you planned or as unplanned. He he got into sniper school. He graduated top of the class, and they said, great, you're going to Da Nang. Off to Vietnam, young man, May of 1968. He gets over there, and what assignments do they give him?
Oh, it was heartbreaking for Chuck because you know, getting on that plane, he was one person, but getting off in Vietnam, the cards had changed. They just herded him off the tarmac there like a bunch of cattle, and he ended up in a regular Marine outfit as a grunt. And he did speak up about it, but they weren't looking for snipers; they were looking for just regular ground pounders. And so he ended up in an outfit that guarded a bridge up north, and it was pretty quiet, and he was there for a few weeks, and then they moved him south down just west of Da Nang, and there's big battles going on there. And that's when he was in an outfit, and they were under fire, and he witnessed a guy next to him killed. He was a machine gunner, and then Chuck started helping his helper, and he got shot, and then Chuck got the machine gun, and he knew if something didn't change, he wasn't going to make it home. And so he was able to finagle around and get into a outfit that had a sniper platoon, and that was about 20 miles west of Da Nang in a place called An Hoa.
He knew that the machine gunners were very vulnerable. Obviously the enemy wanted to take them out, and he had trained and proven himself to be that he could be a sniper. It was an excellent shot. But again, you know, any of us who've served the military knows better than you. So they started, sure. Well, you're a grunt. Well, now you're running the machine gun. And he knew he would be better off on his own protecting other Marines as a sniper, and kind of forced his way into, as I read the story, The Sniper by Jim Lindsay. He kind of forced his way into that sniper group by first being a scout, and then, you know, if you will, moving up the ladder to a sniper, where he was obviously extremely effective. But it really was sort of not as planned as maybe that Chuck thought it was going to be on his way over, did he?
No. Chuck Winnie is a special individual. This book starts when he's just a child, and you can see him and I both wanted it to start early in his life, so that the people who read, the reader, would find out what kind of a person, you know, turns into a successful sniper like he was. So he was really well. He had the ability to talk himself into some pretty neat situations in his life, and he got a job at the Ford dealership in Lakeview when he was just 15, and a great job for a kid. And he got his own pilot's license when he was still in high school, and he was just amazing. And so when he got in that predicament, he handled it well. He faked a toothache, and he got into ANWA, and was able to talk to the platoon about becoming a sniper. And when they found out his record, that he got to be a spotter for another fellow, and there he was, and that's how it started.
Yeah, and it is a good way to introduce people to what it takes to be a sniper, because these are regular guys who have extraordinary skills in this area of patience, breathing, reading all the signs that you need to read as a sniper or as a spotter, because you're out there all alone. You're maybe shooting a long distance, but to be an expert marksman, you've got to have a lot of additional skills, don't you?
Yeah, all this was new to me. I learned so much about talking with Chuck about how it worked, and he was real patient with me. I'd forget what he'd tell me, and we met over a dozen times, and he lived 400 miles from me, or he does. In fact, as I talked to him this morning, and he taught me what it was to be a sniper. And one of the most important things is to know where you're at all times. And when he went through sniper school, they had a lot of training on being out in the absolute darkness and know where you're at. And so he was really handy for some of the outfits that they kind of borrow me. He was kind of like a gun for hire, him and his spotter. They were always together. And of course, there was multiple spotters that came and went, and most of them got to be snipers of their own. He would go out with an outfit, and they used him pretty hard as far as he was about his ability to know where he was.
Situational awareness comes through right in the book, and it's one of those intangibles that gets talked about. As I say, you got to have a real backbone and discipline and patience, but that situational awareness saved him more than once in Vietnam. And he had some pretty amazing kills, but you kind of lose the essence of the man if you just focus on the kills, because he also struggled with the commandment, thou shalt not kill, and he struggled with when he come home after his first tour. He knew he didn't fit in anymore. So there's a lot of stuff bubbling in the pot of Chuck Mawhinney as he's going through living this about 2-year period where he's becoming this top sniper. How does he reflect on all that, I don't know, turmoil that was going on in his head?
You know, calmly. Fortunately for him, he's a person that can handle things like that. And a lot of it, I think, was probably the way he was raised. His dad was a Marine, but he wasn't raised to be a killer or anything, but he was raised to do a good job of whatever he was going to do. And that was his job, was to protect and save other Marines' lives. And that's how he justified it. Right before he made his first kill, he saw a Marine killed out in a field, and the NVA was they'd walked into this NVA outfit, and then it was a kind of an ambush, and this fell out in the front he was pinned down out in the field, and it was awful. They didn't kill him fast. It was hard on Chuck, and so then it wasn't long, and then he was doing the shooting, he became kind of bitter when he saw what they did to his fellow Marine, and so that helped. And then after the first one, and then it was he just did his job, and he was awful good at it.
Yeah, the story that you've ridden the sniper on Chuck Mawhinney, Marine sniper in Vietnam, really gets across this idea that in his psyche, every kill that he's making is saving countless Marines. And that's his job. You said one of the things his upbringing was, if you got a job, do it well. He understood his job was to protect these other Marines, and as a result, kept doing his job as a sniper for the... Actually, I think he did three tours, didn't he, over in Vietnam?
Yeah, he did the first one in the Marine Corps, 13 months, the first tour. And that's when he went home, and you mentioned that his friends were still just kids, and he couldn't... He saw right away that they didn't have any clue or didn't understand. And the Vietnam War was different than all other wars, where they didn't really want to know. And so I think maybe that might have been why he never told anybody until he was outed by another author later on. But he was home, you know, and he just wasn't welcomed by his peers, even the grown-ups around town. They kind of looked the other way. And of course, his family, he spent a lot of time with his family during that month. And then he decided that his real friends, the real people that he could depend on, were back in Vietnam. So he went back and did another tour where he finished out with his 103 kills. And so he went home again and signed up for a third tour, but he realized that they wouldn't let him be a sniper for another two tours was the max. And so he wanted to be a helicopter side gunner, and he got back over there and they wouldn't let him do that. And so he became kind of a policeman, and he did a good job of that. That wasn't his deal, but then he went back to San Diego, and he was a cook until somebody noticed who he was, and then he got to be a rifle instructor, and he liked that.
Well, again, the military always thinks it knows what it's doing best. They take an expert marksman and make him a cook. Just crazy. But one of the things that one of the stories in the book is about Valentine's Day in 1969, which really was a real test for Chuck Mawhinney. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, that's probably the one event that he's most known for. And he'd been there a while, and he had been, I think it was just right into his second tour. He was out with a company of Marines, one that he worked for fairly often. His the CO was Mike Wiley, and it was during a storm was coming in, and they were dug in at a perimeter, and there was a little airplane come flying over like a Piper Cub, American plane, and the guy radioed down to him, said that there was a platoon or a battalion of NVA across the river, and he was afraid they were going to cross. And so single-handedly, Chuck Mawhinney, after dark, with a starlight scope and his spotter with him, stopped it from happening. And it was just an amazing feat that what he did. And shooters have tried since then. He shot 16 NVA in 30 some seconds. This was according to the spotter. And it turned them, it discouraged them, and they never tried to cross again. And they've tried to set up games where people have tried doing this and nobody can do it. They have 16 targets that pop up, and It was really an amazing thing that he was. I don't. Who knows how many Marines he saved? Because they'd have crossed that river. They'd have went right over those Marines.
Yeah. And as you write in the book, The Sniper, and we're talking to Jim Lindsay. It is, again, some of that situational awareness. After the plane radioed down, he knew right where to go, where to find a hide that was the right spot to stop them crossing the river and overrunning the Marines that he was with. And, again, being able to knock down 16 NVA in such a short time, this amazing feat. But it's all those other things too. It's all that, those intangibles, having the right heartbeat, breathing pattern, calmness, patience, situational awareness. It's really an amazing feat that I don't think most of us would do. Our adrenaline and our heartbeat would be going crazy, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you might just there was a guy came across, a guide, and stood right beside Chuck. This was in the dark, and Chuck says he was so close to me I could hear water dripping off of him, and he wasn't going to let him get past him. He was about ready to dispatch him, and the guy turned around and went back across, and then it was just a few minutes before they all came or started across. But yeah, he was pretty cool about things.
Yeah, cool. That's true.
That's an understatement.
Now, I want to talk a little bit about, because Chuck only stayed in for a couple of years, got out of the Marine Corps, came back to Oregon, and went into the Forest Service, and completed his whole professional career, I think, in the U.S. Forest Service, had a family, kids, the whole thing. Which, again, is this sort of like, okay, I close that chapter of the book. I'm not bragging about it. I'm not telling anybody about it. And you kind of stumbled on it. And only because you were really friends was he willing to open up and help tell the story and have the book written, if I understand it right.
Yeah, that is... he actually did go... He was in Vietnam when they were starting to slow down, and he got out early because of that. And then he went back to Lakeview and started his next part of chapter in his life. And with his credentials as being a Marine, helped him get on with the U.S. Forest Service. And so then right away they were moving him from here to there, and just like everything else he ever did in his life, he excelled at it. He became a machinery operator, built the roads and that sort of thing, and it wasn't very long and he was the boss. And so at first, or not gradually, he had some trouble. He didn't know what it was. It was a terrible, I mean, you talk about going from a high of what he was doing over there for 2 years down to driving a bulldozer.
Right, right, yeah.
And he didn't tell anybody because he knew there was nobody that would ever understand except for another sniper. And but he didn't go around with a sign looking for one. And so... There was some turmoil going on inside of him, and he became a heavy drinker, and not like I think of an alcoholic, but I mean he was hit the tavern after work every day, and sometimes pretty late, and it was some things were bothering him, and I don't even know for sure if he even really knew it, but he lived right on the edge. Until he met a gal, and that was another Forest Service worker, and her name was Robin Hood, and she was a few years younger, and they hit it off, and so they had a family, and three nice boys, and they're all doing fine, and she kind of helped him come out of it. I don't even know if she didn't even know it. He didn't tell her about it either. And yeah. The only way it happened to come out is his last father, Joseph Ward, wrote a book called Dear Mom. And
That was the outing. You mentioned it earlier that Chuck kind of got outed, and it got confirmed that he had 103 confirmed kills, another 216 probable kills, and a confirmed kill required an officer to see it occur and be ridden up, and that outed him as the highest sniper marksman number. While most of the world for a long time thought it was Carlos Hatchcock, who had 93 kills, a good Arkansas boy who did a 20-year career in the Marine Corps. And Chuck must have just been happy to let Hatchcock have the glory, and he'd just stay out of it and keep a low profile. And that's one of the things that caught my interest in your book, The Sniper by Jim Lindsay. It's the untold story of the Chuck Mawhinney, the Marine Corps' greatest marksman of all time, because I knew the Hatchcock story. I'd never heard the story on Chuck Mawhinney.
Yeah, that it surprised everybody, and Chuck wasn't really ready for it. He it came out, and then all of a sudden he was interviewed by the L.A. Times, and it was no way he was going to stop it. You know, it was out of the bottle then, and so he had quite a time with it. Some of his friends kind of got cold, and he didn't know why. The time it happened, I was over in Eastern Oregon for 20 years running this ranch, and then my parents and family, everybody's getting older. So I kind of wanted to come back, and so I come back, and my brother and I are partners, and we raise grass seed here for lawns and pastures and that sort of thing. And so I came back on the west side. And one evening I was sitting there watching TV, and there was Chuck Mawhinney, and it was on the History Channel or something. And it was him, and I couldn't hardly believe it. And then they were talking about all the stuff he did, and I thought, oh my gosh, I just had no idea. So I called him up, and by that time I had been writing books, and he knew, you know, he remembered me or everything. So we talked about the whole man. I said, you know, somebody ought to write about you. And he said, well, two guys tried and they both died.
there's a bad sign.
And so he says, you know, I've read your books and I like them. And so I went over and talked to Earl, went over to visit, stayed all night in their house and everything, and they decided to go, let's do this. So.
Well, it's important for a lot of reasons to get history out and the records out. That's why we've been doing Veterans Radio for 20 years now, telling veteran stories. I thought the article in the Los Angeles Times that was written, the headline captured it, I thought, A Sniper at Peace with His Duties. And I really think that captured Chuck's ultimate position here. I'm not surprised to hear that when he got back, you know, he had difficulties and turmoil in his own head and drinking maybe more than he should have. I think everybody did come back and have years and years of transition to get comfortable with the Vietnam War, and I'm not even sure we're comfortable with it today. But your book does a great job. It's an easy read. I really tell people that if you want to know about the greatest Marine sniper, this is the true story. Jim, where can they find the book?
You can get it, of course, online. You know, Amazon. There's several different outfits you can order it from. It's in the major bookstores and even some small ones, but. You can get it at the New York City Airport.
There you go. It's everywhere.
It's a thrill for there's a lady here in Corvallis, Oregon. It's she's my editor, and she's about my age, and this has been a real thrill for her too. As of me, the book has been so well received, and I'm happy for Chuck. And so as she was on a little trip and went through the airport there, and there was the book that she was you know, she was involved with so much. And
yeah.
That really tickled her. But, so you can get it anywhere. There's a lot of feedback coming back now that I'm awful proud of. Personally, that people have mentioned things to me about reading it. It's a real easy read, and it's my way of writing. I make things as simple as I can. It's also a literary nonfiction. I don't think you mentioned that. It's where the actors in this book, well, they're not actors, they're real people, actually talk with each other. And it's kind of a fun way to write a book. It was easy. It was helpful for me because I knew Chuck so well, and that's the way I write. And it's almost got 500 reviews now from Amazon. And
no, it's a good read. I encourage folks to do it. And Jim Lindsay, I appreciate you taking some time with Veterans Radio today, and certainly pass along to Chuck Mawhinney our thanks for what he did to save all kinds, untold numbers of Marines back in the day in Vietnam. So, Jim, thanks for your time today.
Well, thanks for having me on here. I really, you got a nice deal here, and you do a good job of it.
Thank you.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans. And you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows
by visiting us at veteransradio.org. That's veteransradio.org.
And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
We again want to thank our national sponsors, the National Veterans Business Development Council, NVBDC.org, VA Ann Arbor Health Care System, the Vietnam Veterans of America, Charles S. Kettles Chapter, Ann Arbor, Michigan, VFW Graf O'Hara Post 423 in Ann Arbor, and the American Legion Prescorn Post 46, also in Ann Arbor. We appreciate all your support. You can go to veteransradio.net, click on the sponsor level, and continue to support keeping Veterans Radio on the air. And until next time, you are dismissed.